The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
But Uncle Willem, I'm only 12 years old. I still hate girls. I'd much prefer a frog.
Don't disgrace yourself in the eyes of God, Oscar, please.
But then make a bad husband. Don't make me do this.
You must, child. It's the Lord's rules. You must, please.
Do you wanna...
Go ahead, Ezekiel. Go ahead.
You know what I mean? I can't breathe!
You guys have been out in the sun for too long.
Do you want to marry me or not, you dumb pig?
Hey, everyone. Another Loose Cannons podcast coming at ya. I'm going to steal Ruben's opening. As you can already tell, Ruben is not here today because he's gone. He's not here. He abandoned us.
He's got better things to do.
Yeah, exactly. Like work. Like a sucker. So we're continuing our guest host month. This week we got Marcia coming back to discuss 1994's Holy Matrimony, directed by the late Leonard Nimoy. This is going to be our kind of in memoriam episode, if you will.
Oh, boy.
I think it was...
Forgotten.
When it was chosen, it was like right after he passed, so...
It's true.
It's definitely an in memoriam choice.
So we're going to try and honor him with this podcast. But before we do that, let's... do the heralds and announcements. Thank you, Patrick. I don't know how to do any trumpet sounds with my mouth, so I'm just relying on you to come through on that.
Got to pick up the slack since Ruben isn't here today.
That's true. So I guess it makes the most sense to start with Ilya, since he's usually after me, and I'll go last.
Yeah.
Do you think that herald...
No, nothing to herald or denounce. So, Patrick, you go ahead.
Okay, I am going to herald Michael Mann's Black Hat, which I think most of us have heralded at this point. I watched it last night, and it's great. It's I think I wrote in my review that my hands were sweating watching it.
Nice.
It's definitely a hand-sweating movie. It's pretty intense, pretty crazy. I'm really sad that action movies like that don't make more money than they do at the box office.
That's true. I was hoping at least internationally it would catch on, but because of Hemsworth or whatever, but that movie bombed both abroad and here. It's a real big bummer.
Yeah. It's a super bummer when something like American Sniper makes, you know, $400 million and that movie can't even make back its budget. But
yeah.
Yeah, give it some time. Maybe it still might it'll end up on some people's radars.
I think it'll be appreciated. Yeah, I think it'll be appreciated after the fact. I think it's going to be around for a while. It's going to have some staying power.
But yeah, obviously, I love that movie because I wrote a big, long thing on our website about it, which you can find at loosecannons.net.
Yep. That's right. Yep. Loose Cannons. We forgot to plug the website. Yeah, we have...
That's true.
Our website, loosecannons.net. Writing, video, audio, listen, watch, read, engage all
of
your senses.
What about you, Marcia? Have you seen anything that you thought was either terrible or great recently?
Can I do TV shows
sure.
as well?
Sure, yeah.
Sure, why not?
Okay, so I just got super into this TV show that's probably for kids, but it's called Steven Universe. It's animated. It's just crazy good. It's crazy good. It reminds me of anime, but good.
That's a good way to put something.
Yeah.
Don't tell that to Patrick.
I mean, I will even freely admit that a lot of the anime that I used to love is really bad.
Super bad, so. Right? Yeah. I don't think I've seen a good anime in like 10 years.
Yeah, you look at it now and you're like, this isn't good. What was I thinking? I guess I was just really into the...
like probably 100 episodes of Dragon Ball Z, so I can't really speak either.
Fight scenes.
Yep. Violence and sex. That was all we were thinking about when we were young.
So Steven Universe, thumbs up?
Thumbs up.
What channel is it on? Like what station?
I think it's a Cartoon Network show. Oh, and cool. Each episode's only 11 minutes, and they air two in a block, which is kind of weird because it chops up all the possible storylines. But other than that kind of weird thing, it's very cool. It's strong female character dominated. They've got a new kind of world built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool.
Easy enough to check out since the episodes are so short.
For sure.
Nice. Cool.
Nice.
I'm going to go ahead and herald Guy Madden's My Winnipeg.
Mm.
Yes.
Nice.
I saw it. We played it at the theater that I work at last weekend, and my coworker and I did the preview together, and it was just the two of us in the theater, and we were laughing so hard. I laughed so hard that I cried multiple times, and I don't think I've laughed that hard at a movie in a really long time, but for me, just like Guy Madden's narration is just super funny all the time. There's a whole sequence with them subletting his old house, but then the woman who still lives there won't leave, so they're trying to recreate childhood memories, but with this old lady just hanging out there, like interfering a little bit. And
awesome.
I also love that movie.
Yeah, I remember really liking it. I watched it like 2 or 3 years ago, I think, also in the cinema. It was super good, so glad to hear it holds up.
Yeah, I was excited and also nervous because I'd heard almost nothing but super universal praise for it. So I was like, well, I hope I really like it. Every once in a while, one of those movies comes out and then I'm like, oh, I don't like this as much as everyone else. But this one totally worked.
Nice. Yeah. I always thought Guy Madden had a great sense of humor.
Yeah, he's a really funny guy.
Yeah.
All right, I guess let's get into Leonard Nimoy. Marsha, this was your movie, so go ahead and...
Wait a second, let's, sorry, we didn't do the, we didn't give the information about the movie yet.
I did at the beginning of the podcast.
Did you say when it was from and all that stuff?
Yeah, 1994, directed by Leonard Nimoy. Remember I went on the big thing about R.I.P.?
Oh, yeah. I thought we just kind of stopped there. Okay. Sorry. I remembered me doing it at the beginning before we started the actual podcast, but I didn't remember you doing it.
That's okay.
So, Holy Matrimony.
Yeah.
Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, Marsha, give us a plot rundown since you're the you were the chooser of this film.
I guess. And let me just say, I submitted like 4 really good movies and then this one. And this is the one we ended up on.
I voted this last.
Yeah. It was definitely a sort of RIP kind of thing. So the general feel of it is that this girl and her boyfriend commit a crime, and then they have to go hide out with Mennonites. He dies, and then she marries his little brother, who is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And shenanigans. Pretty much, right?
Yeah. Basically. That's it.
Yeah.
Basically.
Oh, yeah. The only other plot point would be that she doesn't... The reason that she stays to marry him is because that the brother before he died hid the money away that they stole, and she's trying to find it. And that's why.
Yeah, and they won't let her stay unless she follows the code of the Bible, which they follow.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right, so you're taking Ruben's place, sort of. So, I guess, Patrick, what did you think of this movie?
I did not like this movie. I think it had a bit of a... At some points, it felt like a it wanted to be a more like grown up film, and then at certain points it felt more like a Family Channel movie, especially in the like more actiony sequences. They just looked really shit. Like the cars are driving, you can tell they're driving so slow. And, and when they hit that guy with the door on the truck, you could tell that he gets hit like not hard at all with it, but he like falls down and passes out from getting hit by it. And I was like, there's no way that knocked him out. But yeah, and there's also like, I don't really understand that character that shows up later in the movie, the FBI agent. If that's also, I don't understand why the hell the FBI is investigating this crime in this movie where they like rip off $50 from a carnival or whatever. Like, I don't know how much money it is, but it's not a lot of money. It's not enough money for the FBI to be involved in this case. So there are a lot of like insane plot things going on in this movie.
Yep.
Yeah. I would say, well, there are probably movies that I like less that we've done for the podcast. This is objectively the worst movie that we've, like, from a, you know, construction standpoint and just, like, script standpoint. I feel like there's almost no jokes in this movie for being a comedy. Like, most of the jokes when they happen are bad, but they're also super few and far between. There are huge segments of this movie where nothing even tries to be funny, and I'm just like, what kind of a movie is this? Is it like, are we supposed to be think this is like a wacky sex comedy where you're like, ah, he's a kid, but they're acting like they're real married, and then there's like a weird turn where it becomes kind of sentimental, and he's almost like a mom figure, and I mean, she's almost like a mom figure to him, and I was like, this is a strange movie.
Yeah, it got a little creepy.
But also very boring.
Yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. I didn't really like it either. I really didn't like it. But I don't know. I thought the weirdest thing by far about this whole movie was it's basically a will they, won't they sex comedy, or if comedy, you know, very little, between a 12-year-old boy and I don't know, a young woman, Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, in her 20s, I would say.
That basically, this movie derives most of its motivation to exist from the whole idea of, might they actually have sex on screen? It might happen. Who knows? Let's see if it will happen. Oh, and that, like, wow, I've definitely never seen anything like that before. And I think that Leonard Nimoy is, I totally have a different idea of him. For me, it used to be like, oh, so this was the guy who was on Star Trek and like a weirdo and whatever, like in some nerdy way. Now it's like, oh, he has like super, diehard fundamentalist religious ideas about sex and gender and whatever, and definitely put a really interesting spin on him as a person.
Oh boy!
So yeah, for what that's worth.
He also did Three Men and a Baby, which is another movie.
Watched that movie. I watched that movie. That's with Tom Selleck, Ted Danson, and Steve Guttenberg. I used to watch that movie a ton when I was a kid.
Me too.
When I was like 6 or 7 years old, I watched that movie all the time.
Well, yeah, that movie was highest grossing film the year it came out. Like, it was the highest grossing film that year.
Yeah, that was a huge hit.
And now I really, it's not like I really was like, oh, maybe watch that movie again. But now I'm definitely very apprehensive about rewatching that. So, yeah.
All Marcia, right. What about you, Marcia? You loved it, right?
Man, women are so greedy, y'all. But you can fix them with enough like country values, I think.
It's true.
Like if you make them live without electricity, they're cured of their greediness. It's like greedy camp.
Greedy camp.
That's what I got.
Exactly,
out of it.
Yeah.
Well, the weird thing about it for me is, I was telling Patrick, they have like one lens that they filmed the whole movie with.
Yeah. Like,
all the action scenes were with that same one lens. It was like this mid-length lens. I don't know. I could barely sit through it. But I've heard he has that like kind of moralizing thing through the rest of his works. Like, that kind of like religious tone. Did anyone else get like a abuser kind of vibe? Like a mom abusing her kid kind of vibe out of it? When she was being mean to that kid? Because that was supposed to be like her son that was going to fix her, right? By being someone for her to take care of.
Right.
And she was like mean to really...
Yeah, they're both really mean to each other in a way that made me super sad. I was just like, this is a depressing relationship, and yeah. I don't really buy the turn that they suddenly like each other.
Yeah, the movie, like, it conveniently forgets horrible things the characters do to each other, like, one scene later. It's like, oh, I know you tried to abandon me, but we're on the same team now. Yay.
Right.
It's like... Right, I was going to abandon you and take off with the money. Yeah. I was going to abandon you and take off with the money, but now that we're together again, I guess we're pals or whatever. Like, high five. Like, really? We just... Mm-hmm. This movie has, like, amnesia scene to scene. Like, it just forgets. It's like a goldfish.
Yeah.
Yeah, including the fact that, like, her boyfriend dies in a horrible car explosion. I was like, what is this doing?
Whatever.
Oh my god, I laughed so hard when Jimmy blew up in the car.
That was pretty funny part.
I was like, when the car rolled, I was like, oh, okay, he died in a car accident, that's bad. And now, and then the car just explodes, and I was just like, what? Holy crap.
He struck oil.
I was laughing so hard because I was just like, talk about overkill, Jesus. And they just leave the car out there, just like the burned husk of the car just sitting out there. Like, did they even take his body out of it? Like, gross. Why would you leave it out there? Oh man.
I thought like the one dude in the whole, well, the one person in the whole movie who seemed to be like really taking his role seriously and thinking that like this is gonna be something good that I'm in here was Armin Mueller-Stahl.
Weird that he's in this movie.
Yeah,
like he was just like really committing to that part. Like I felt like he was like, I'm this dude, I have this, like, it seemed like he had, like, a whole sense about him where it was like, yeah, he's weird and, like, he really believes in this stuff, but he's, like, willing to try to be more pragmatic about it in some cases. But unfortunately, no one told Armin Mueller-Stahl. I guess they just gave him the pages of the script that had whatever he was saying in him. And so he thought, I mean, it's Leonard Nimoy, right? What can go wrong? Probably gonna be fine. It really felt like he was in a different movie altogether.
Gonna say, considering she just won the Oscar, Patricia Arquette was horrendous in this movie. She was so bad. Like, her almost every line delivery was just like super over the top, but like not in a comedic way, and just like, I didn't buy anything that she said. I mean, most of the acting, apart from Armin Mueller-Stahl, was really bad, but she seemed especially egregious, and I was like, wow, she really came a long way in the last 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, 21 years. You didn't like her fake Maryland accent?
Yeah.
I did like the gag they did where she's wearing the Marilyn Monroe wig and then she takes it off and her hair looks exactly like it. And I was just like, that's a funny gag.
I wrote that down and I was like, I wonder if this is a joke compared to like...
like if they did it on purpose? Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like nothing even remotely that smart happens for the rest of the movie. So I was like, I don't buy that the people who made this movie could come up with a gag that good.
Maybe it was some aspiring cineast in the makeup department or hair department
who was like,
I'm going to make this movie so much better.
Congratulations. I just gave your movie its best joke.
I mean, I feel like I agree that Patricia Arquette is terrible here. I feel like her role is also really thankless. Like, she plays just a character that's basically made to yell and scream and scratch and claw through her way through whatever's going on, never reacting to anything in any kind of reasonable manner, always basically like a shrill stereotype of a female character that's I don't know if I've ever seen anything as bad as this. Like, when you think of stereotypically shrill characters, like, now this comes to mind, and, like, this is hard to beat. Like, really, it's really tough.
Yeah. And so she's not really redeemed.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
That's true.
And I also didn't, yeah, I don't. Oh, my God. There's just nothing. There's nothing going on, like, thematically in this movie. It's just like, we need to string these scenes together, like, have their motivations change from scene to scene. It's just, you know, people's brains change just like that on a dime. It's just like, oh, and now we like each other. Oh, now we hate each other again so that we can make this joke. Oh, now we like each other again so we can make this joke.
It's will they, won't they?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I feel like maybe there could have been like a way in which this movie could have worked if, like, the fact that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is, I don't know how old he is in this movie, but, like, it seems like 10
his
or 11.
His character is supposed
something.
To be 12, I think. Yeah.
12. Yeah. So the fact that whatever he's trying to say to Patricia Arquette, like, the fact that that's, oh, it's kind of stupid, but also, like, this kid really believes it because that's what he was brought to believe, you know, like,
yeah, and he's 12,
and if you kind
so.
Of just, yeah. And if you kind of use that as commentary on, like, how, basically the ideas of relationships or ideas of people in relationships are at a stage where even a 12-year-old is beginning to question whether this is even really, you know, reasonable or if that's really how people should be together. But that's how he was brought up to what that's what he was brought up to believe. So that's what he just has to, like, say. But instead, it's just like this movie seems like it's really it's super on his side. Yeah. Like it wants us to, like, be for him and, like, just feel bad for him that, you know, this is really not working out the way it should. You know, that she's not a good wife to him and blah, blah, blah.
He's supposed to be, like, the moral voice and, like, the voice of authority. But I can't decide if it's because he's a dude. I think it's more because he's, like, pastoral, like, from the country, you know, that gives him, like, the moral upper hand on everyone.
One of the lines
I wrote down at the end of the movie was, a husband like you doesn't come along every day. And I was like, gross. Like, he's a tiny child.
Yeah. That was... And they make this big deal about her, like, wanting to go to Hollywood or whatever. Like, that's, you know, like, some cheap dream or something like that. Like, they have a lot of that where they're just like, yeah, all these people who are, you know, out in the world and not pastoral like us are, like, you know, sinful and horrible and it's just terrible out there in the world. But not here. It's simple and life is great.
Yeah, I mean, this was made 1990, whatever. 94. It doesn't seem like Leonard Nimoy really caught up to that whole time or whatever. Like, it seems like none of these people acted like it was the 90s. Everyone acted like they were, like, in a TV show from the 60s or 70s or whatever. Like, oh, yeah, it's a runaway, like, Bonnie and Clyde thing. And then she picks up a dude at a bar and whatever, like. And that's her being her, you know, that's the reflection of the times, the way this movie sees it. Yeah. And it's like, it's so embarrassingly in a vacuum, like it has nothing to do with reality at all. It has nothing to say about reality and it has nothing to do with it at all. So it's just, it's really, like, I think this movie is really, like, mostly interesting as an artifact of whatever was going on with Leonard Nimoy at the time, and how how much people let him just do whatever he wanted. Like, I'll make this weird movie about a woman marrying a 12-year-old. It's like, oh, Leonard, just
Three Men and a Baby was such a huge hit for him, and they were probably just like, yeah, no, this dude just makes hits. Like, make him, let him make whatever he wants. He's a money making machine.
He's comedy and, gold.
America eats that stuff up or whatever.
And I mean, this has similar things in that it has like really cynical ideas about gender, and there's that part where they're at the casino and the dude is talking to him outside the pool, and he's like, they always want the same thing. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like, yeah, the money. And, and the guy's like, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, what am I supposed to think of this scene? I was like, when it was happening, I was like, are they trying, I don't know, like, are they making fun of themselves? No, right? Like, it seems
like... Yeah, there's a way you could pitch a scene like that where it's just like, our ideas are of gender are so dumb and simplistic that even like a tiny 12-year-old has figured out it, but instead it's more just like, it's so universal, like even anyone can get it. It's just that's, all women want is money.
That's true.
I mean, hey, let's be serious. It is so true, isn't it? It was like so bizarre. Like at any point in this movie, they had like so many opportunities to like take a turn towards a more satirical or a more like or less serious or less self-serious turn, but they never did. And everything that just happened, the further the movie goes, it becomes more and more serious in a way. Like the FBI agent, like Patrick said earlier, like that character is treated like completely seriously. That's a real dude, apparently. That's like, he's so bad or whatever. Like, they don't want to use him on a real case, so they send him to take care of this. And then it's like, oh, and he sees this as like an opportunity to like maybe make some money for himself or whatever. And then this movie's all like completely just, you're already way beyond the level at which you could have gone back and said, hey, we were just kidding here.
Go ahead, Marcia.
Oh, I feel like they realized that she was the villain and they wanted a different villain, so they just kind of shoehorned that FBI guy in there.
This other movie podcast that I listen to every once in a while, F This Movie, they bring this up a lot, where in the like late 80s and early 90s, writers had no idea how to end a comedy with like a satisfying way. So they almost always introduce like an action scene that has no place in it. Like if you watch Stripes, it's about people like goofing around in the military, but then the last like 20 minutes is them actually like fighting people. And I'm like, why is this in this movie? Like, this makes no sense. And even Three Men and a Baby ends with a chase. So I feel like this was just the trope that it's like, how do we end a comedy in a way that resolves something? Well, we gotta have a chase sequence and people, you know, beat a bad guy, and then that solves the problems.
Yep. Yeah.
Short Circuit, both Short Circuit movies, Police Academy.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. You name it. They're all there in those comedies.
Beverly Hills Cop also. That's already...
Well, yeah, that's kind of a cop movie, but yeah.
But it still has like this huge sequence where there's no real jokes. Like, you can do action scenes in a funny way, but that finale is just like Judge Reinhold and him like shooting a bunch of dudes. Like, it's not
just murdering a bunch of really similar looking dudes with Uzis.
Yep.
And sunglasses.
That's true. And then this, he gets stuck in the
that I also didn't understand, like, how the FBI agent wasn't able to get out of the like front of a like a tractor. Or, like, yeah, he picks him up in the tractor. He's like, get me down from here. And it's like, you're like you're like at most 6 feet
off the
ground.
He's like 8 feet off the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a trained, basically military officer or whatever. Like,
yeah, yeah. This guy's
you
the
can
FBI.
Probably
like you
can
get
jump out of
that.
That.
You might sprain your ankle, but it's highly unlikely.
Yeah,
it's a very Home Alone type ending.
It is, and that whole like chase sequence too is like the dumbest thing. Where like Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like holding a balloon in front of his face, like that'll fool him. That'll disguise me. This balloon. Oh no, my balloon popped. Ah, hilarity.
I like that it begins and ends with carnival.
I also didn't like the whole gag of him fainting was just the dumbest, laziest
so dumb.
Joke. I was like,
yeah,
why is this in here? It
was it like a party trick he pulled out while they were eating lunch someday, and they were like, oh yeah, let's put that in.
Oh man,
it's a real Chekhov's gun.
To me, it's just so funny that Joseph Gordon-Levitt will always have this movie attached to him. Like, they will always be able to, like, just dig up this movie and show him scenes of it, just to make him really super embarrassed.
And that Mennonite accent they had him do.
Oh my god,
that
they had them all do so bad. Yeah.
That accent was so funny that I was laughing so hard at watching him do that accent. That was so funny because he's like 12 and he's like, "You're going to be my wife."
Yeah, I thought especially I forget the actor's name, but Jimmy Cooper, the boyfriend, like his sounded like sometimes like an Irish accent and sometimes like a Scottish accent, yeah, and then sometimes Dutch. It was just all over the place.
Did
and
you
then
say
sometimes
Jimmy
he doesn't
Cooper?
Have
like from the OC, Jimmy Cooper?
Yes, from the OC. Yeah.
That's where
Cooper.
I know him from. I know that dude.
Tate Donovan. Tate Donovan is the actor's name.
Oh, that's right.
Oh no, we lost Ilya.
Well, have to continue on without him.
But yeah, no, him exploding in the car was by far the funniest thing.
He was like drinking beer and like crazy driving.
But the fact that like Joseph Gordon-Levitt is ostensibly responsible for killing him because he's like, "Don't drink beer," or whatever, and then like they get into a fight, and then he rolls the car. I was like, "That's so dark." Like, he's not at all bothered by the fact that he probably just killed his brother.
They literally just never address it. They just like turn around and they're like, "Okay, married."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like that the entire community is against it, except for Armin Mueller-Stahl, who's like, "No, it's the." It's the law, and I feel like the movie should have, like, upended that and be like, oh, this was a mistake, and, like, our community could learn something about, like, maybe not, like, doing the letter of the law for everything, like, but instead it's, like, the opposite, where it's like, yeah, I mean, like, it could work out really good for a troubled woman in her 20s to marry a 12-year-old.
It really helped her out.
Yeah.
He was knowledgeable about things.
Man, all those scenes at the commune when she has to like dig through the plants or whatever because Joseph Gordon-Levitt figures out that she's like Patricia Arquette is so greedy that he can basically trick her, and then the worst thing obviously with the money thing that's attached to this rod or whatever like I couldn't believe that
like
scene
a cat
was
toy
in there
for women.
Like that was like so many moments where I was like, I can't, like, wow, I can't believe this is actually in here. It's so amazing.
And then he like blackmails her into doing all those chores.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I love her Mennonite clothes, though. I love her 90s clothes, and I love her Mennonite clothes.
And they set her up so badly, she's just, like, smoking and swearing in church.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, my family's super religious, and I at least know enough to, like, when I'm around them, you know, put on a nice face and like be polite, not just be like, "Fuck you, grandpa."
Blow smoke in your face.
Yeah.
Just calm come smoking, especially like, since holding a boombox playing music, and you're just like wearing sunglasses, and you're just like, yeah, fuck you.
I think the movie can't decide how smart she is. Like, it wants her to be super dumb, but she can't be, like, that dumb.
But, like, also, the fact that she's smoking is like, oh, she's evil. Look, she's smoking. Like, that's the level at which this movie operates.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, look, they look like church-going folk. They look... They're the good guys. She's all dressed all weird and smoking. She's obviously the bad guy. And, like, it doesn't really evolve from there. Like, it's not like... It's not like Patricia Arquette gains in humanity throughout the movie. Like, she gains... It's more like Joseph Gordon-Levitt rubs off on her. Right. And then she's like, oh, yeah, I should really be more pious. You know, like, or whatever the fuck.
Like, go back to my family.
Yeah.
And the movie wants to have it both ways, too, because there's that scene early on where it's just, like, her in her bra, and I was like, I felt like the camera was staring at her in a really uncomfortable way, and I'm like, you can't have it both ways. You can't be like, oh, she's so, like, smoking, and she's so bad, and all these people are so good, but doesn't she look hot with almost no clothes on?
Yep.
Yeah, definitely wanted it both ways. Yeah, it's this movie, if nothing else, is indicative of like Hollywood's crazy double standard, where it's like,
yeah, totally,
you know,
yeah,
morality derives from, you know, being pure and being, you know, like working the land and not wanting, you know, riches or whatnot, but, you know, isn't it fun to look at women with no clothes on? And aren't these things kind of nice sometimes?
It's like, this movie is so obvious about it. It's almost like, oh, like, wow. It's so, in a weird way, like Hollywood obviously still does this. It's just way more subdued or like there's this big artifice about it, not like, hey, we're not like that. We look, our women, they look sexy, but they're also like strong characters or whatever. And it's like, there's still like a lot of bullshit about like the way that women look in movies and how movies are advertised to make you basically want to go to a movie because there's like a stripper scene in it or whatever by the main actress, and then she's in it for all of 5 minutes or whatever. So obviously it's still doing it, but it's never like what's really amazing about this movie is like how open it is about it. Mm-hmm. Like in this movie, it's laid bare. Like it's like the skeleton of all of like the way Hollywood works. Like no one would do it this openly now anymore. You know,
yeah, I feel it's like the 90s was the era of like gender differences and men are from Mars, women are from Venus. So it was just like idea of universalism. That's like, women are just like this way and men are just like this way. And
women be
why
shopping.
Not just talk about it? Yeah, exactly.
But there's something like really almost fascinating about the way this movie really is the way it is. Like it's not
so
like
on the nose.
It's so on the nose, but it's also like, it's just, I don't know. I've never seen something like this ever. Like I've seen like bad action movies and I've seen like bad comedies and I know what they look like and I don't like, I can forget about them like completely. But this movie had like all these weird, really bizarre scenes in it where it was like, it kind of lingered in my memory at least a little bit.
And Ilya, I'll say that that may be because you've never seen like a movie on the, I don't know, like the Fox Family Channel or whatever.
Oh man.
Yeah, we don't get that here.
Yeah,
or the Hallmark Channel.
Yeah, the Hallmark Channel and I think it's Fox Family. I don't remember what it's called now, but there's like, and maybe it's ABC Family. Maybe that's the one that I'm thinking of now.
Them
like
too.
Yeah, the family channels. Like they're just rife with movies that have this sort of morality just writ large all over them. It's like being greedy is bad, loving Jesus is good. You know. We'll still put a little sex
small
in there.
Small town values, always.
Yeah. Maybe have a kid.
the thing that got me about this movie was that it's so, I guess the scene that is indicative of this trope the most is the scene where she's like laying in bed and he wants her to get up and go to church, and she's like naked, so she comes to the door and opens it, and it's like, you know, like shows him her boobs or whatever, but you don't see, you just see like the top half of her, because this is a, they don't want to show any nudity because that would be bad,
right.
But he sees her boobs and he's like, ah, and he runs away. But it's like, but shouldn't that be something that you want to see? Why are you running away from it? But I don't know, like,
how
in the movie, the movie's
how weird
also
was,
like,
sorry, Patrick.
No, I was gonna say, the you movie's finish. Like playing that for a joke, but it's also kind of titillation, where it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. she's just totally naked, think about that.
And then how also weird was to, it that he like simulated having sex with her? That
super like, weird, was, right?
That's
how
weird.
Fucking like, weird
so
was that?
So uncomfortable.
That's like, also, it didn't make really sense to me, because it's like, isn't he supposed to be like all isolated and like super religious, where they never talk about sex at all? And like, how the fuck does he even know what he's like? What it's supposed to even be like?
Yeah.
Right. And then he's like totally doing the thing that like any like I guess any kind of any teenager would be doing when they're trying to fake having sex in movies. You know, like yeah. That's
right,
like the typical
right.
movie scene of people faking sex. It's like you're jumping up and down out of bed.
But then
she has to like shame him.
That was such a fucking weird scene. Like,
the only thing I can figure in that scene, like, and this is not spelled out in the movie, but this is the subtext of that scene, is that this, like, the group of boys are the ones antagonizing him, like, you're not a real man or whatever like that. The only thing I can figure is that they always like go to places where people have just got married, like to their house, and just like hang out by the window and just like listen, and they're just like, are they doing it? Like, this is like the thing that boys do in the Mennonite colony. Like,
boys will be boys.
I was like, good lord,
that's
so
totally points to his like super loose characterization, that he just his personality fits whatever they want. Like, they came up to the scene and then they reverse engineered a way where his character would plausibly do that, because before that he's always talking about how like, I'm 12, I still hate girls or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I just didn't any of that.
I didn't
so
get that scene.
So then he's like, but then they're like, oh, but we gotta have this great gag where he pretends they're having sex, but then, which is the exact same gag that's in an episode of Frasier, like, that came out the same year. So apparently this is, like, what was on people's mind. Like, there's a part where Frasier is, like, vacationing with his girlfriend, and then it turns out his ex-girlfriend is at the same place, and they have a room right next door, and he gets really insecure about it. So then he pretends he's having really wild sex with his girlfriend, but then they catch him pretending. What? And he's like jumping on the bed, and it's the exact same scene.
Right. Oh, the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And I think
comedy gold.
The thing you would think is that they're like trying to play that scene for laughs, but the way that they shoot it and the way that it's edited, it's not at all funny. Like, it doesn't feel like a comedic scene. They don't have the beats down. The comedic beats are not there at all. And so you're just like, what was that for? Like, was it for a joke? Because it wasn't funny at all. I don't know how anybody
also
would find that funny.
Usually the best thing about these hijinks music is the hijinks movies is the fun hijinks music that you get when they're actually doing the jinkies or whatever. But this didn't have any of that, and I was sad.
Yeah,
they had this one stupid song that kept playing every time someone was in a car about wanting to leave and get somewhere, living day by day or whatever, like, one day at a time. And I'm like, holy fuck, really? Like, they actually put in a song that's about what these characters want to do. They made someone write a song that will describe what they're about to do.
There was the list of songs at the end of the movie made me laugh too, but not for that one. There was a song by somebody named Stompin' Tom Connors.
Yes.
It was called Roll On Saskatchewan, and I was like, that's a hilarious name. Stompin' Tom Connors.
He probably knew how to make poutine.
And awesome. He probably does know how to make poutine. And the it was so funny. The production company that he was listed underneath it was Stompin' Tom Limited. I was like, that's a great name.
Stompin' Tom Limited.
That made
How much
laugh,
of this dude. Movie do you think was just like looking out through Leonard Nimoy's eyes? Like, how much of that do you think is just like Leonard Nimoy vision?
Yeah.
Certainly some of the
Probably Carsons. A good amount.
A good, yes. I think a solid amount.
He didn't write it though, did he?
No, he didn't.
No.
But I mean, he was probably at the point where he could pick whatever script he want, and obviously something about this script appealed to him.
Yeah.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, I don't know who wrote this, but I guess...
I looked it up at one point, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
I think it was multiple people.
Two dudes. Yes.
It definitely seems like it's got
definitely
the...
Definitely some dudes.
It's got the stink of, multiple writers coming in to rewrite scenes so that they can get more gags in there.
It's like they were running a relay and they just passed it off. And then they just threw away whatever pages they got and they just kept writing.
Yeah.
Holy shit, yeah.
We need so a train gag.
One of the writers was then responsible for The Rock.
Nice.
I guess I never looked at that movie trying to look for its weird, like, fundamentalist undertones. But now I will.
Well,
yeah.
Sean Connery does say winners go home and fuck the prom queen, so... That's pretty fundamentalist right there.
Yeah, both of like those dudes. Both
Michael
of those
Bay
dudes wrote
that
movie.
That
wow.
Too,
that's true, yeah. That does seem like a Michael Bay line, you're right. Or Sean Connery. Sean Connery would have said, winners go home and slap the prom queen. It's okay to beat your wife.
Yeah. Well, Sean Connery would have fit into this movie for sure. No problem.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with the vague accents.
Yes. I thought that, like, that's actually interesting that you guys mentioned this, how the movie keeps missing the comic beats. It's really funny to me, like, how when that happens, your movie automatically becomes super weird and strange and, like, potentially, like, just really traumatic. I don't know, like, watching, like, all those scenes, suddenly it's not funny, but, like, it's just really offensive and terrible.
Yeah.
And how you're just always, like, Yeah, okay. Go ahead, Marcia.
It's like that guy at the party that tells really sad stories, but then he's trying to make like a funny tone, and you're just like, oh, okay. It's like
yeah.
That.
Yes, it's that.
It's like instead of being self-deprecating, you're just being like super, just a total bummer.
Yeah, it's no timing whatsoever. So like, he thinks the jokes are landing, but they're not.
I think he thought this was a timeless movie, too.
Yeah. One for the ages.
Yeah.
It's
not like steeped in the 90s, even though she's like obviously dressed from the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It could have been like from any point in time. Like
80s, 70s.
Based on the technology that is used in this movie. It could
also
have easily been on
cars.
Like, can we go back to the booth that she is in at the carnival? Like, where has that ever been a thing at a carnival? Like, yeah, throw the ball at this thing, and if it hits, like, it'll blow her skirt up. Ah, that's funny. Like, I was like,
yeah, that was
what the hell
super
is
weird.
Super racy.
Who has created this, like, this booth, this, like, objectify a woman booth?
So like, you can only dunk a clown in a pool so many times before you get bored.
But that's like, you get hired, like, that's your job. Like, what in the world, you know?
Be like, if someone's athletic enough, you're gonna show your underwear.
I just didn't. I
and then like somehow the movie starts out with that guy, that owner of the fair, right, who's like super creepy and is hitting on Patricia Arquette, and like then gets knocked over the head by her boyfriend, and then he reappears at the end where the movie conveniently forgets the fact that he was this total creep in the beginning.
I definitely thought that was going to be a rape scene.
And it's like, yeah, exactly. Whoa. That's exactly what I was like expecting almost to happen. Like, whoa, fuck, this movie is not wasting any time. And then in the end, he's just there as like the guy who got robbed. He's not like the guy who also tried to like molest her. He's just the guy who has like this money, and then like, oh, well, I mean, if you give me back the money, then I guess it's all fine. And then they shake hands and it's all ha ha and that's it. And it's like it never even gets any kind of play, the fact that he actually tried to basically rape her. So yeah, I don't know.
Property crime always trumps personal crime.
It's true.
Oh boy. This movie has
it doesn't matter how sleazy he was, he doesn't deserve to get robbed.
Is the, you know, the honest, hardworking people of America, you know, have to rape somebody every now and again, but they don't deserve to have their money taken. The podcast audience can't see it, but I just rolled my eyes so hard.
Yep.
They rolled into the back of your head.
It's just like,
yeah.
A joke so uncomfortable it could have been made with a straight face in this movie.
Yeah. It could have. Oh boy. Oh boy.
Do Mennonites really do that? Do you think any of that was like researched Mennonites?
Probably
I don't
not.
Think any of this is not.
I think I the one thing that they,
not even a little bit.
Maybe the, someone just the came one, in there and was like,
"That's in the Bible." Yeah.
I think they research was like, oh, so they wear these clothes and they have this thing where if you die, then your little brother has to marry your wife. Like, which I'm not even sure if that's even the thing. That probably that's like a super offensive. It's not even true.
If they knew about it.
Yeah, like somebody had like a religious second cousin or whatever who mentioned that. Like, and then they were like talking one time. The two writers were like, I just heard this crazy thing. Have you ever heard this? Like in the Bible, it says this.
It's also if you think about it, like
spitballed the premise.
Yeah, it's also like pretty degrading to Mennonites because they're probably like, that's not the way things work. Like, we have better sense than that. Like, we're not that dumb, guys. Jesus.
Even in the movie, they do.
Yeah.
It's only Armin Mueller-Stahl who really insists on it.
But then,
everyone
like...
else is like, we're going to be ostracized.
Yeah, but that never comes back. Like, it's never...
It sure doesn't.
Like, there's that one scene I was like, oh, there's going to be, like, a big conflict about this. But then there never is. Like, it's all about... her just trying to get the money after that, and I was just like, what happened to that? Like, I thought you were gonna like address it, but you didn't really.
And they never get a divorce either. It's just a good old child marriage.
I know. Right.
Yeah.
And doesn't she say at the end that she's gonna come back for him in the creepiest parting line ever?
Yeah, like once he's older.
I'll be back in 10 years, hubby.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Then we can do it and it won't be weird.
Nothing will make
anyways,
can't wait
anymore.
Can't wait for the sequel. I mean, time for the sequel, right? I mean, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Patricia Arquette are definitely
I hope they filmed it like Boyhood where they just like followed them around for 10 years. Just like every few months, let's check in, film a scene. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, like, listening to people have sex in the Mennonite colony. Yeah.
I was trying really, really hard to find some kind of interviews with any of the people involved in this movie, and I have not found any. Like, no one wants to talk about it. Probably everyone just pretended that never happened.
Yep.
It's really... Too
bad. I mean, it did really poorly at the box office, and none of the critics liked it for obvious reasons, so.
Yeah. That all makes perfect sense.
Yep. One of the pictures on IMDb is Leonard Nimoy on the set directing, though. It's pretty.
Does he look very, like, authoritative?
A little bit, yeah. But also... kind of down homey. He's all unshaven. He's got kind of like a half beard.
Whoa.
I'm Like, I was looking back through our notes and I couldn't remember voting on this movie. Like, I don't remember the vote when it happened.
I don't know how this movie came out on top.
I don't yeah. either. That's
I think another movie won, and then we came back to this one.
Right, yeah, there was this other movie, I think, that, and then I guess we decided on this
tied,
one.
And then yeah. originally one was going to be the winner, but then I'm pretty sure I talked you into switching it.
Yeah.
It's all my fault.
Oh, we were going to watch Sita Sings the Blues, but then this one. Yep.
Oh, why didn't we...
Because of Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy.
Wanted to do his memory justice by really shitting on a movie that he probably was embarrassed
I think,
that he made.
Sita Sings the Blues is also about religion, but probably in a much better way.
Wow. That kind of makes me sad, though.
Yeah, you can always watch it on your own time and write a review of it on loosecannons.net.
You know what? It's not the same.
Or you could pick it later if you...
Yeah, we'll have to do it at some point.
Yep.
We'll have to have, like, a fifth person if everyone's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm considering briefly, like, I don't know, just doing a little quick podcast with maybe, like, two people, just, like, a short... I don't know, like, doing a little short thing. Whenever I see a movie with somebody in a theater or something, just like me and that person being like, all right, we're going to sit down and talk about this movie. You know, do-do-do-do-do, what did you think? Do-do-do-do-do. Instead of doing that like a full
great.
Long
Some
discussion
mini sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, make sure to put that music in it.
Yep.
That's going to be a...
Just playing underneath the whole time.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-
2-minute podcast.
2-minute podcast. Do, 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 do.
Thumbs up.
I hurt my back at this movie.
You guys have any more notes or something about Holy Matrimony?
I took three notes. My notes were, the hair gag is funny. OMG, I laughed so hard at the car exploding. Stompin' Tom Connors, Roll on Saskatchewan.
Nice. Roll on Saskatchewan is pretty good. Stompin' Tom I'm going to look that up now, that song.
Me too.
Maybe I can find it.
There's like a gag. There's a gag in Futurama where you can put on Bender's glasses and see how Bender sees the rest of the human race. And I'm just going to think about this film as like Leonard Nimoy glasses. That's how he viewed the human race.
Nice. Yeah, I found a bunch of that on YouTube. Stompin' Tom.
Stompin' Tom!
Yeah, he's got like 15,000 views, one of those things has. Wow. So,
Stompin' Tom Connors, big on YouTube. Fine.
Probably lights up the Saskatchewan festival circuit.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Yeah, the only other thing that I thought was super funny was that they use, I think it's the only time in the movie, but they use slow motion when she's abandoning him, when she's like driving away. Real sad moment.
I mean, that FBI guy, right? First of all, he somehow followed them, I guess, just based, like, did he smell them? Like, there was no indication that that was where they were going. And then he finds Joseph Gordon-Levitt, like, just looking out of his car, all like, oh, there you are. Right?
Oh, there's that kid.
And then they follow Patricia Arquette, and they find her within, like, 5 minutes. How do they even know where she was going? Was it just like one road and that whole
that's my theory. State? That's my theory.
And there you was, just follow that road. Yeah, like that's how you find people.
The way I was thinking about it was they just took the path of least resistance out of Canada. And so there's just like, you know, like one main drag out of Canada into the rest of the United States. And they just, that's so, the road that they were on. Nobody else wanted to take it, though. Just them.
She gave up smoking, didn't she?
She did, I think, yeah.
That's the whole movie. After she was reformed.
The whole movie was about how hard it is to quit smoking, I think.
I wonder if Joss Whedon likes this movie for that reason. He's a real big anti-smoking person.
He does, yeah. He does do some, like...
Yeah, I noticed it a little bit, but this time through, with Ruben and I watching Buffy, we've both noticed it, like, a bunch. There's a whole bunch of things where someone starts smoking and then they die, or...
Yeah. Hey, I'm gonna go smoke. Killed by vampire.
I really want to listen to the most recent one, Basil. Isn't it, do vampires poop? Is that like, do you want about that?
I've always asked myself that question with zombies, too. I've always wondered about that. Where does it all go? It's a pretty legitimate question.
They just swell up like ticks.
Where does it all go?
But, I mean,
I love that as a title for a book. Or like, where does it all go?
But like, doesn't Spike smoke? He's like the coolest dude in Buffy, and he smokes, right?
He's a bad guy when he's smoking.
Yeah.
Oh, does he stop smoking later? Does he like?
No, but there's like, they point out sad things about him, like the part when he's stalking Buffy. And they know that he was stalking her because there's a giant pile of cigarette butts outside her house.
It's like, oh, yeah, that's the only guy that smokes
in the world.
All of... What's that? What's the city called again? Buffy City?
Sunnydale.
Sunnydale,
right. The only guy in Sunnydale who smokes. So yep. Everyone else is dead.
All the other smokers are dead.
Yeah, because there's like that episode where with all the nightmares because that kid got like abused and then his dreams become reality, and one of the first things is like a woman sneaking down to the basement to smoke, and then she gets killed by the dream monster.
That's what you get, lady.
It's true.
That's what you get when you smoke a cigarette.
Spoilers for Buffy.
Oh man.
Yeah, I think I'm out of things to say about this bad movie. I guess I feel sorry that this is how we chose to memorialize Leonard Nimoy.
Sorry, Leonard Nimoy.
Sorry, Leonard Nimoy.
I will say I had forgotten that JGL was in this movie, and then when I saw him, I was like, oh my god, it's little kid. Yeah. JGL.
Yeah, that freaked me out too.
I guess this is pre Angels in the Outfield too, so an even earlier role than Angels in the Outfield, because that was how I remembered him for the longest time. Like, he was the little kid from Angels in the Outfield, which is a movie that I watched like a million times when I was little. Nice. Like, it was on repeat. We were jamming out to that.
You got an angel with you right now.
Tony Danza had to pitch the big game.
Marcia, you got any more things you want to say about Holy Matrimony?
No, I hope I never see it again.
It's nice to have a new low bar for the podcast.
That's true.
Yeah, it used to be like, what, Little Caesar?
Yeah, Little Caesar was our first. And now we got this one.
And the Garden of Words, although that movie is pretty funny.
Oh, Garden of Words. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was
At least that movie is pretty. At least that movie was like, the animation was really pretty. So there was something pretty to look at. This movie is not pretty, like...
No. Not at all. It's the worst.
it's just so terrible.
It's like an assault on the senses. Thank God it doesn't have a smell.
That's true.
It'd be just those giant grain towers. So it's fermented grain just wafting through.
The chicken house.
Oh man. Alright.
Alright. I think we're ready to
roll. Alright, yeah. So. Thanks everybody for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, Go ahead and give us a 5-star review on iTunes, subscribe, and all that good stuff. If you're really mad at us for shitting on Leonard Nimoy's memory, go ahead and leave us some angry comments or send us some hate mail. It'd be really cool, because we've never gotten any hate mail as far as I know, so now's the time to start. And yeah, thanks everybody. Thanks, Marcia, for coming back again.
Thanks, Marcia.
And for picking this great movie.
Yes. We should post this podcast on a Leonard Nimoy message board or something.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
Right on.
That'll give us some controversy. Get us some hate mail really quickly.
Get some controversy.
Yeah, troll
going.
Some Star Trek forums.
Yeah, I'll get right on that.
All right, thanks everybody.
Bye.
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 Later.
Goodbye. Beep, 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 beep.